Big show for you here today. Justin Boone joins me for a little look ahead to next year's fantasy season, specifically looking at breakout candidates. Obviously, it's early. A lot could change. We want to give you a little bit of an advanced preview of some potential breakout candidates and what needs to happen this offseason for them in order to hit that breakout ceiling next fantasy season. Plus, we get Boone's full reaction to the absolute mess that is coming out of the Buffalo Bills organization right now. Plus, we answer your dynasty debate questions from the mailbag. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that is Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy? It's been a minute since I've seen you. A lot has happened to the football team that you root for. The least interesting of which, I didn't know that anything had happened to the Bills this week. Yeah, I was going to say the least interesting of which was that you lost in the divisional round of the playoffs, because everything that's happened since then has been way more interesting than the fact that they lost a big heartbreaking playoff game once again. So I ask you, Boone, what's going on? How's it going?
Well, I'm wearing all black here for a reason. This was definitely a choice. I often rock a Bills hat on this show, try to support the team. Not so much this week. I figured that we should go with more funeral vibes right now. And, it's not totally funeral vibes for the Bills Super Bowl window, but I think it's closed a little tighter after what's happened this week. And yeah, last week when I was on, I was excited. I was talking about how I knew they were going to have a really tough game against the Broncos. You know, I was ready to accept whatever outcome happened in that game. The Broncos were a good team.
Sure.
It was unfortunate that they lost, but it was a really close game. Everything that's happened since, so that's what's really hard to swallow. And it's not that I don't think that McDermott should have potentially been, fired. I do think they needed a change, but it's the way that they have gone about everything this week. And the fact that they didn't clean house, they didn't get rid of Brandon Bean as well, which I think is the move. If you were going to get rid of McDermott, I think you needed to get rid of everybody there and kind of start fresh. And we didn't see that happen. Now Buffalo has become the joke of the league, essentially, despite being a really good team the last several seasons here. And yeah, it's been tough, Armin. It has been very difficult to deal with, knowing that this team was so close to potentially making a Super Bowl run the last few years, to what we're at now, which is a lot of uncertainty and a lot of strange situations in that front office and a very bizarre press conference today.
Yeah, it's only gotten more and more bizarre. A lot of what you said is similar to what I said with Scott on Monday, which was that, yeah, if it was me, I could justify firing Sean McDermott, but I think you had to clean house. You had to completely start fresh. And that's usually what good organizations do. And if you're wearing the black for the funeral, it's for the era of respectability for Buffalo. And I know I don't have to tell you this, Boone. You know how much of a laughing stock and just what a dysfunctional mess that team was prior to Sean McDermott getting there. I mean, I don't have to tell you that. And Sean McDermott, who it just has really been kind of kicked on the way out. And look, like I said, I think you could kind of justify moving on from him, but that is a guy that dragged that team before Brandon Bean even got there. Because remember, McDermott, I mean, I know you know this, but the people out there, remember, McDermott was hired, then ran the draft his first year there, and then hired Brandon Bean from Carolina, where McDermott came from. McDermott's a big reason that team was dragged into respectability. It is a very bizarre situation to see how it's going now. But yeah, so you mentioned the press conference. By the way, we're going to get into our main show. We're going to get into breakout candidates today, what you're watching with those breakout candidates in the offseason. We're going to get to your dynasty debates. But since you brought up the press conference, Boone, let's actually take a look here. Let's take a listen to what Bills owner Terry Pegula said about the drafting of Keon Coleman that has left many people stunned today.
Yeah, can I interrupt? I'll address the Keon situation.
The Keon situation.
The coaching staff pushed to draft Keon. I'm not saying Brandon wouldn't have drafted him, but he wasn't his next choice. That was Brandon being a team player and taking advice of his coaching staff who felt strongly about the player. And, you know, he's taken, for some reason, heat over it and not saying a word about it. But I'm here to tell you the true story.
There's so much to go off of. Boone, what are your thoughts?
I mean, first off, we're talking about a player that's still on the roster, guys. What are we doing? How are you just totally destroying this guy? And maybe they have plans to get rid of him this offseason. I figure that they do, but does this ever look bad? And this is what I mean about Buffalo becoming this like clown show this week, where players that are there, and this is what I'm worried about as a fan of the team now, players who are there, are they going to want to stay in this organization if this is how they're handling their business? And free agency is going to come up in a month or so. And are other players around the league going to want to come to Buffalo now, where Buffalo had become a place that players did want to go play with Josh Allen, compete for Super Bowls? Now, I think they're going to question that. We also have a head coaching vacancy to fill, a new coaching staff that needs to come in. And are certain high-end candidates going to want to tie themselves to this front office with the speculation about what potentially went down here? Like, this revisionist history is what it seems like to me, Harmon. It really seems like they're trying to just tell the public this is how it was and believe us, when a lot of people have gone around since that comment was made and found the receipts and found the clips of Bean actually suggesting that he wanted Coleman and trying to take credit for that pick. It's just a weird situation all around, and they have a long way to go now to try to fix this offseason. And it's not like it can't be fixed. It's not like, you know, they can't get a great head coach in there. We can't get some excitement. They make some signings. They make some draft picks. And by the time we get to next season, there is kind of that renewed hope. But at the moment, for the Bills to go from what appeared to be one of the premier franchises and how they've been run the last several seasons to now just being like this joke. And I talked mid-season, we were joking about, like, are the Bills, do they have the worst receiving core in the league? And at first you kind of scoff at that. And by the end of the season, it's like, oh my God, like, they're in the mix with like the Raiders and the Browns and all these teams. Now they're in the mix with the Raiders and the Browns for the worst possible reason, which is looking at a franchise who can't make a right decision, can't even have a press conference where they had time to prepare. And they took their time before they had this press conference. It was not like it happened right after the firing. Now I'm starting to get fired up here, Harmon. But it's not like they rushed into this. They had time to think about what they were going to say. And this is the message that went out that almost everyone out there who wants to think about it for more than a second can see through this kind of, you know, weird statements and revisionist history stuff. And it's just very disappointing when it was not that difficult. They could have made changes. They could have moved forward. They could have brought in new people. And yet we're going about it in this half-hearted way. And it seems like this is like the worst possible outcome for how this could have gone down.
Yeah, not surprisingly, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the actionable takeaways from this, or the things that really matter. Because ultimately, like, does it matter that they're burnt? Like, they're completely burning Keon Coleman by saying this? Probably not. I think Coleman was like, they benched him four times this year. They were done with Coleman. It looks stupid, especially because Brandon Bean later on in the press conference, actually, like, he said, that was my pick. You know, he basically said the exact opposite to what the owner just said, but that makes it look even weirder that the owner is almost coming to Brandon Bean's defense like he's a little league dad or something like that, you know. And that's what this is. And Bean took exception to this. He talked about like how it was an attack on his character to say that he's had a power play or something like that. I mean, he might have not done it intentionally, but it's pretty clear like who's been spinning this stuff to the owner that he felt the need to go out there like this. Again, that's all embarrassing, that's all kind of silly, but does it really matter again that they're burning Keon Coleman? No, probably not. Although again, all it would have taken was one phone call to Matt Harmon and I would have told them that the Coleman thing was a bad idea. But nevertheless, I'm still available for consulting, Brandon, if you'd like to call me. My fee is, it's payable for Terry Pegula and the boys there. But anyways, that's not revisionist history. That's old history. The thing that matters here, though, is like, yeah, what does the organization look like as you are trying to recruit a head coach? Especially because like the idea that, oh, it was the coaching staff that picked Keon Coleman. They're interviewing one of those members of the coaching staff. They're interviewing Joe Brady for the head coaching job. That also looks bizarre. And also, Terry Pegula said in the press conference that number one, he kind of contradicted himself in saying that, well, it was a bad call that lost us that game, but I also decided to fire McDermott based off that game, especially because Josh Allen is like crying in the locker room. He went into detail about that. And it's like, this was my point to Nate on 301 yesterday. I don't think this is that attractive of a job, because not only are you you got the clown owner here doing this stuff, but in 2 years, if you don't win a Super Bowl with Josh Allen, how quick is the floor for you? Especially because at some point it'll run out on Bean too. So that's the thing to watch here with Buffalo. They're already kind of talking to a small group of people who have had experience with the organization before, which I think is another level of a red flag here. Just tough time for the Buffalo Bills right now. But we'll see who they can recruit as a head coach here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and like, who's the ideal candidate now? Like, Clint Kubiak would be amazing. I want to see an offensive mind come in there, but he's going to have his pick of some jobs here. And is he going to want to take this one? I don't think he's going to, right? And my biggest fear, and this is like full-blown panic Bills fan worry, is like, if this continues down this road, if the players are kind of upset with this decision, could we see Josh Allen be one of those guys that just decides to hang it up early and not have one of these really long careers? Could he go down like the Andrew Luck road and just go, you know what? I've had a good career. I saw people bring up the fact, and we might have talked about this at one point, that his wife, he said earlier in the season when asked about it, that his wife got him to realize that he is more than just a football player. When I heard that at the time, things were going well.
I remember,
and I was like, ooh, that's kind of one to note, right? That's a little worrisome that he's talking like that. And I'm sure it was all coming from a good place, but as a fan, it puts that thought in your mind of like, uh-oh, could this be one of those situations, you know, a Calvin Johnson, a Barry Sanders, these guys that have great careers, are superstars, and just aren't really happy with what's going on with their organization and the fact that they can't get over the hump and win a Super Bowl, and they just call it a career after, you know, a really good career still, but don't have that same longevity that we get from some other players. So that's like the worst possible case scenario. So just, we're covering all bases here. But yeah, I don't normally dress in a goth-like fashion, and that's how bad things are, Harmon, that they've got me dressing in all black with pale January skin that I have after being inside for most of the last 4 months here. That's where we've gotten to based on the Bills' decision-making and that press conference today.
Somebody put Justin Boone in the coping corner. My God, we're so far on the panic meter. Well, that's our update on the Buffalo Bills and Justin Boone's state of mind. Of course, we're going to have a full breakdown of the coaching moves of that post-Super Bowl. We'll do a full breakdown on that. It'll probably be Nate and I do a show there. So hopefully the Bills have attracted a head coaching candidate that can make Justin Boone, his will to live, increase a little bit from that monologue that we just got there. So, all right, that's that. Let's get into the meat of the show here today. Like I mentioned, much more rosy, optimistic topic than how we started the show. We're going to be talking about some breakout candidates. Boone, you wrote a couple of breakout pieces for the site, so we're essentially just talking through your candidates there. I believe we've got buckets for these. Let's start in the NFC. I believe you've got three buckets here. You've got confident, hopeful, and longer shots. So since this is your baby, I'm going to let you kind of take this any way you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just mention, so I wrote a breakout article for every division, and there's still a couple left to go for the AFC this week, but we're going to talk about some of those players today. So a little bit of a spoiler there. But the idea was just, who is probably the most likely breakout candidate for every team? Extremely early to do this. We got free agency. We got the draft. There's so many things that are going to happen before we really lock down on these guys. But it's an early look at some of these players. Some are a little more obvious, and that's why I've broken it down into these different buckets. Some are you're a little more confident in. Some guys are more long shots, but let's talk through them. First segment, we'll go over NFC, and then we'll talk about AFC a little later in the show. So to start off, the first bucket here is the guys that we are confident in, the guys who I truly believe that without a doubt, they're going to come out next season and have that breakout, take their game to the next level. And some of these guys you could argue have already broken out. You know, Tucker Kraft is a good example of a guy that if he didn't get hurt, as we've mentioned, he was leading the position in fantasy scoring through, you know, the first 8 weeks or so. So he's a guy that you feel very confident in next season. He's going to come back and compete to be a top five fantasy tight end, maybe even better. Colston Loveland just finishing the season so hot. Of course, he had the draft capital behind him. We expected him to develop into being a really good player and a meaningful part of that offense. It really started to happen as the season went along, and I think he is going to be a key piece and a key playmaker for them. And a guy who, I mean, other than Trey McBride and Brock Bowers, you could kind of put him in that conversation after those guys as the next name that you could be looking at drafting in fantasy. We'll see where ADPs settle in, but he's somebody that I think has that kind of ceiling. And we saw that in the last month or so of the season with him having, you know, multiple 100-yard games, him just getting a ton of targets. He's going to be a great player. Cam Scatterboo, I've gone over the stats on him. We've talked about him even since the season ended here, that before he got hurt, he was getting touches at an incredible rate. Over his last four starts, averaged over 22 touches per game. If you look at the whole season, the only running back that had over 22 touches per game on average was Christian McCaffrey. And could that change? There's a serious injury that he's coming back from, of course, but the recovery timeline on that looks like it's about 4 to 6 months. All indications are he's expected to be back before training camp. And if he comes back into that same kind of role, he was producing at a high level, of course, with that kind of volume, how could you not? I think he could come back and be an RB2 with legitimate RB1 upside if he gets that kind of volume again. And then Ricky Pearsall is the guy that we've talked about who started the season so hot, a couple 100-yard games early, was producing really well, and then injuries just derailed his season. He's been in and out of the lineup. And unfortunately, we just really didn't see him get back to that same kind of level consistently the rest of the year. But you have to feel pretty good about him in that offense that we know Kyle Shanahan's going to continue to keep that offense moving. Brock Purdy, hopefully a little better injury luck next season, that he'll be out there for the full season and doesn't miss a ton of time. And then you look at the state of that receiving core. Brandon Ayuk, he's not coming back, so he's out of the picture. George Kittle suffering a serious Achilles injury. We don't know what his status is for next season. So I think Ricky Pearsall is going to be a much needed piece in that offense, and a guy that, if he can stay healthy, is really going to come on for fantasy. And I'll stop there. We could chat about those guys before we move into the other two buckets, which are the hopeful players, hopeful for a breakout, and then the longer shots.
Yeah, I think these are all four interesting candidates and degrees of confidence here for me. I think Tucker Kraft is like borderline cheating to include him for the Packers, but I also don't mind it. One, because I love Tucker Kraft, and two, I don't really feel confident projecting any of those receivers to break out next year because of just how muddled that room can be. Colson Loveland, I also think is, I agree, a slam dunk breakout candidate. I think closer to being like the tight end one overall next season than the tight end five in rankings next season. Scatterboo and Pearsall are interesting. Do you have any questions about Pearsall's game or like fit, because, or is it just all a health based question with him? Because I like Pearsall. I think anybody with a pair of eyeballs can see that when he's healthy, Ricky Pearsall is good. I guess to me, it's just the question of, again, what's the role going to be on the team? What other receivers are added this offseason? And yes, can he stay on the football field?
I mean, if you look at what he did this year, like I said, he had the 200-yard games in the first 3 weeks. When he came back to the lineup initially, definitely wasn't himself, right? And we saw that. Mm-hmm. 5 catches for 20 yards over those next 3 games when he got back in the lineup. But after that, he popped up again, right? 6 for 96 in week 15, 5 for 85 in week 17. I don't know how many fantasy managers had the guts to actually put him in their lineups for the fantasy playoffs, but if right. he was in your lineup, those were pretty good stats, even though he didn't find the end zone there. And I think the good news coming out of this season, of course, the injuries really unfortunate there, but the good news was he was a top 24 fantasy wideout 4 times in the 6 appearances where he wasn't limited due to injury. I kind of went through like those 3 games that I mentioned. I'm not going to count those because I don't think he was himself in those contests.
Yeah.
But if you look at those 6 appearances where injuries weren't a factor, top 24 wideout 4 times. I think we've seen it. We've seen these glimpses. This one feels very obvious to me that he is going to emerge with the draft capital behind him in a really good offense. You know, the 49ers had a great schedule this season, but the injuries were just too much to overcome. And I think next year, depending what happens with that electrical station or whatever it is next to their practice field, hopefully we get a little better injury luck from them as a whole. And hopefully we see some of these guys stay out there all season. And I think if that happens, we're going to see Pearsall really emerge as an impact fantasy player.
I like how John Lynch at the press conference today says, yeah, we're looking into that. You got to look into everything. I was like, that sounds like something a politician says when they're not, when they're definitely not looking into it. Like that, that's what that sounded like to me in terms of the electrical station. But yeah, I agree with you. The other, I'll try to sprinkle this in as we talk about some of these breakout candidates, is just like what to look for this offseason to your degree of confidence. For me, it is what other receivers are added to the room here, because not just target competition wise, but the thing that surprised me about Pearsall this year that I didn't expect was just, he ended up playing so much outside X receiver. I think he would be much better and more like predictable in terms of when he's going to have his big weeks, and he's, and maybe even just a higher floor is when like he's able to move around, play more from the slot, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, Pearsall himself said he only got four starts as himself in 2025, and you mentioned those were four good games for him. So I agree with you. I think we have seen it. The Cam Scataboo conversation is going to be interesting. I agree with you that if he walks into the role that he was in last year, agree, big time breakout. But it is a new coaching staff. He is a day three drafted running back. Historically, those are kind of bad bets to make. And not, that's without looking at the player individually. Just day three running back going into a new season with a new coaching staff. Like, they could add competition to this room, right? Like, Tyron Tracy was that guy. They added competition. Tyron Tracy was dusted by Cam Scataboo. So just something to watch this offseason. But at least he sounds like he's going to be healthy for the offseason, whereas Malik Nabers, they had a great quote where they said he's trending towards hopefully being available for training camp, which is kind of a bizarre thing to say. So yeah, definitely something to watch on Scataboo, but a good breakout candidate. Let's get to the next category here. This is hopeful. I'll read off the names and you tell me which one you feel really strongly about here. You've got Emeka Ibuka for the Buccaneers. Not a player I think we need to talk about. We've talked about him a bajillion times. Trey Benson, Arizona Cardinals. Jalen Coker, Carolina Panthers. Could talk all day about Jalen Coker. Jacoby Crosky Merritt from the Commanders. And Tyler Shuck from the Saints. I thought you hated Tyler Shuck, so this is interesting to me that you have him here as a breakout candidate.
I mean, he's a hopeful breakout candidate. He's not a confident breakout candidate. But yes, the more I've gone back and looked at Tyler Shuck, I've been giving you your props on it.
You've been looking into it. You and John Lynch are looking into it very deeply. Yeah, I got it. Okay.
The more I go over it, I still stand by what I said. I think the ceiling for him at best is still low end QB1. And specifically, we talked about him from a dynasty standpoint. And in dynasty, most of my teams, I'm set at quarterback. I'm not looking for that next quarterback to come up. So I suggest that I will be trying to shop him this offseason. I still feel that way. But if you're looking at that Saints roster, I think he's someone that showed us more than enough this season that you can feel like he is comfortable in that offense. He is going to be the week one starter next year. Showed a little bit of rushing ability this season as well. So a little more of a fantasy ceiling there, even if it's not like a high-end QB1 fantasy season. I think he's more of that borderline, like low-end QB1, high-end QB2. But regardless, he definitely deserves mention, and you deserve all the accolades for calling that one out around midseason or whenever that was.
I'm just kidding.
I think Trey Benson here is one to me that's interesting, because it looked like that ascension was going to happen this year. James Conner goes down early, and you figure, all right, everything's lining up here for Trey Benson to be the starting back in an offense where the running back has been successful for fantasy. And then he goes out and gets hurt right away. And he's out for the season, right? He tried to make a comeback. He wasn't able to. So we didn't get to see anything other than those early games when he was mostly sharing the field with James Conner. In those games, though, he was more efficient than James Conner was, right? He had 170 scrimmage yards on 29 touches during those first three contests when both of them were healthy. Conner, 133 yards on 40 attempts out there. And isn't this what they planned to do? Like, when they drafted Benson, wasn't the idea that he was going to be the heir apparent here to Conner? I think it was, right? So we're looking at Conner also coming back from an injury. He's going to turn 31 years old before the season. I think expecting him to come back and be the same player that he was before this injury at his age, pretty unlikely, even considering the idea that Trey Benson might have been making that move before anyone got hurt this year. And so in my mind, I think this is just a natural progression where they're going to give him this opportunity, you know, former third round pick. He's 7 years younger than James Conner. I think they're going to give him his shot next year, and we'll see if he's able to run with that. A lot of things to be sorted out, of course, in Arizona in terms of coaching staff, scheme, and all that sort of stuff. But right now, I think Trey Benson is someone that I'm pretty interested in trying to go get on the cheap, because I think it's just an injury discount. I think if he had been out there this year, we'd be looking at him in a completely different light. Of course, we talk about Jalen Coker all the time, but just finished the season so strong, right? 12 targets, 9 catches, 134 yards and a touchdown. Bunch of career highs in his last game there. Was great to see. I don't think it was that much of a surprise to us at all, but he is a really interesting player. And then JCM, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, what a weird season going from like the hype machine that we had before the year where he could take over this job to the way it kind of went, where he got an opportunity, didn't really run away with it. We saw Chris Rodriguez start to get involved. We saw Jerry McNichols have some moments as the third piece in that backfield. And yet at the end of the season, JCM was more the guy. He looked more interesting. He looked more explosive. Chris Rodriguez only topped 70 scrimmage yards twice, never went over 85 yards in a single game this year. JCM went over 70 scrimmage yards 4 times on the year, did it twice in the final month. I think he's the player that you want in this backfield, on top of the fact that Rodriguez and McNichols, they're set to be free agents. So right now, JCM looks like he should have an opportunity depending who else they bring in. But fantasy-wise, I'd be looking at trying to make a move to get him in Dynasty as well.
Yeah, really interesting player. By the way, we're showing his stats on the screen right now. I would never have guessed that he had 800 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns. I know that's not like a ton of rushing yards in a 17-game schedule, but still, there were just so many times he was completely uninvolved or like the third back with Chris Rodriguez holding it down. Yeah, he is definitely an interesting one because I think there's a chance that they kind of run in with another committee-based backfield where he's the lead back of that committee this offseason. They internally promoted at offensive coordinator. They just removed Cliff Kingsbury and they promoted David Blau. Remember, he started a game for the Lions as a quarterback. He actually played games for the Cardinals, I believe. He was on the roster there. That he was kind of the quarterback coach. Now he is the offensive coordinator now for this team. So that could lead to some system familiarity here. But I don't know. It's just so weird. That'll be an interesting one to talk about as we go through the offseason. But I do think the Commanders are also a candidate to potentially take a big swing at running back. So that's something to watch this offseason. And I guess the same would apply to Trey Benson as well, but same front office that drafted Trey Benson is remaining in Arizona. It's just a question of what the coaching staff looks like, because I don't think James Conner is going to be on this roster here this upcoming season. But yeah, both of these guys, like a Jeremiah Love type of player in the NFL draft, you got to watch out for a big swing there. Probably not for the Cardinals in the top, you know, 5 picks or whatever, but the Commanders potentially later on in the top 10 there. But let's get into the longer shots here, because we got 4 interesting names on this one.
Yeah, Terrence Ferguson, the young tight end for the Rams. Torrey Horton, who kind of had his season stolen by injury. It was a very weird one. He got hurt. We didn't see him again. But before that, he had carved out a role in that offense already. I think he's a really exciting player to look to. Jaden Blue, who we joke about all the time with our resident Cowboys fan, you know, producer who? Colin. We'll see. I mean, it took until week 18 for him to really do much, and it wasn't even that big of a game. But you go into next season, we'll see what the Cowboys decide to do, if they want to go cheap again at running back, if they bring back Javonte Williams, which they suggested that they at least want to do. That'll have a big impact, obviously, on Jaden Blue having a role where we could call him a fantasy breakout next season. Seems more likely that he's still a backup on that team, which is why he's a longer shot. And then Isaac Tesla on the Lions. I mean, this guy, incredibly efficient, you know, all the touchdowns, despite just 16 receptions on the season. But the team invested quite a bit to get him, right? They invested 3 third round picks to make that trade, to make the move to get him. I think the only thing that's holding him back, I think we'd be much more excited about him if it wasn't for the fact that this team has a lot of players in that offense, and it's going to be difficult for him to see a big enough target share where we can feel good about him for fantasy. So it probably would require an injury where we see one of their other receivers go down, and then he gets more of an opportunity in year 2. But you can't deny he was good. He was very good in the role that he had this year, and he earned a bigger role as the season went along there.
Yeah, I think for the Lions with Tesla and then Cowboys with Jaden Blue, it's just those are teams that are tough to pick a breakout player for, because they're veteran teams with established starters. You know, you would need some level of shakeup there. Potentially for Jaden Blue, it would be Javonte Williams moving on. Man, Torrey Horton, God, I really hope that they saw enough from him to walk into next season feeling good about him, because Shahid is a free agent. I wonder if Cooper Kupp becomes a cap casualty for them. I think they actually have a good amount of cap space next year due to the Seahawks, but obviously not sure you're paying Cooper Kupp's salary for his level of contributions at this point. Did they see enough from Horton to make him the wide receiver too next year? Because I love Torrey Horton as a talent, but he fell in the draft due to injuries, and then he got hurt in his rookie year. You wonder if he becomes one of those what could have been type of players. Thoughts on Horton at all? Because he's somebody that I really
definitely
like.
Saw enough, like I was saying, like to give him the role that he had even at the beginning of the season as a fifth round pick. He was playing around 48% of the snaps before he had those injuries, had 5 touchdowns in his first 8 games, had 2 top 10 weekly fantasy finishes. God. Like, we were seeing it. That's the start of a guy potentially breaking out, and the injury just totally stopped that. I think Ferguson's interesting as well, because depending what they decide to do in that Rams tight end room, if we see some of those guys leave, which, you know, Tyler Higbee, he was hurt this year. He's getting a little deeper into his career. In the 5 games where we saw Ferguson have at least 3 targets, which is not that much, just 3 targets at least, he posted 50 yards and or a touchdown 4 times in those 5 games. And he wasn't getting like huge volume. So that's a sign to me that obviously Sean McVay knows what he has there. That's a young tight end who's finding a way to contribute, even though he's in a crowded tight end room. And there's 2 great receivers who are commanding a lot of volume as well in that offense. So he is very interesting and someone that, I mean, we know there's so many guys in this rookie class that came out this past year that are going to be sophomores next year who are going to be fantastic tight ends. And I think Ferguson's someone that might fly under the radar compared to some of the other guys because they had much bigger seasons. And yet it would not surprise me if we see him come on and become a fantasy relevant player as a, you know, a top 15, or maybe even get himself into that low end tight end 1 range next year. I think that's within his range of outcomes.
Yeah, Ferguson's a guy of any of these longer shots that I might have argued should be in the hopeful category, just because I know they really like him there in Los Angeles. I think he's an exciting player. He flashed this year, and they did so many interesting things with tight ends, especially him specifically was a guy. They would split him out as a true outside receiver when Devontae Adams was hurt. They used him to like lift the lid and clear out space for some of their 13 personnel stuff. So if he can just develop more as a receiver, because there were definitely times where him and Stafford weren't on the same page, there were communication errors, or he just didn't quite know how to finish the play. But tight end's a slow developing Polaroid type of picture, to use a Scott Pienowski term. So I like Ferguson. He's definitely somebody that I think could become a more of that hopeful category breakout player. But good list there in the NFC. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk through AFC breakout candidates right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to talk through some breakout candidates this year with our guy, Justin Boone. Let's shift it over to the AFC, and let's jump into the confident bucket. Who are we confident is breaking out from this conference this year?
So this is a group where I'm sure some people are going to be like, obviously these guys, they've already broken out to some extent, right? What are you even wasting our time talking about these guys for? But I think they could all take their games to another level next year. That starts with Amarian Hampton on the Chargers. We stick with the sophomore backs, Travion Henderson on the Patriots, RJ Harvey on the Broncos. And then we got to say something nice about the Bills today. So we'll highlight Dalton Kincaid on the Bills, who was well on his way to a breakout this season.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for injuries derailing him again. And I mean, for Hampton, RB16 in fantasy points per game, you know, and he missed 7 games. So it was a bit of a smaller sample size. Missed some time due to injury there, but double-digit fantasy points in 6 of his last 7 outings. That's despite all the offensive line injuries that we discussed all year long, how things for this offense really didn't look the same as the season went along, and I think those offensive line injuries were a big part of it, so you hope for some better injury luck for their O-line next year. Plus, if he gets Mike McDaniel here as his offensive coordinator, this is incredible. Like, this is so good for him. We know what kind of coach McDaniel is. The offensive game is going to be great for them. The rushing attack, though, he comes from the 49ers system. Like, I don't see how anyone couldn't look at this and think this is just a massive win for the Chargers as a whole, but especially for Hampton here. So really, really like him. I think a monster year is coming. And honestly, based on the stats and some of those games this year, I think we could have seen a monster season this year if he didn't get hurt. Travion Henderson, I know people are so frustrated. Like Ramondre Stevenson, when he's been out there, yeah, kind of holding him back, still heavily involved. But I think next year we'll see him take his game to another level. We'll see him become that weekly fantasy difference maker. I mean, he was a top 10 fantasy back over the final 8 weeks. And I know Stevenson wasn't out there for some of those games. But Harmon, I'll bring it up again. I've compared kind of his career ascension here, early part of his career, to what we saw from Jahmyr Gibbs, right? Jahmyr Gibbs splitting. I mean, to this day, Jahmyr Gibbs is still splitting to some extent, but we've seen him take on a much bigger role over the different seasons for the Lions. And I think if you look at Gibbs' rookie year, right, he was the RB11 in fantasy points per game. He only played 56% of the snaps. His final stat line for the year, 945 rushing yards, 316 receiving yards, 11 total touchdowns. Would you guess that Henderson ended this year with 911 rushing yards, 221 receiving yards, so a little less there, and 10 total touchdowns? Like a very similar finish to what we saw from Gibbs. We've seen that explosive ability from him. I know people are still going to have their doubts. I mean, I put this article out and it got some comments on it right away of people saying like I was, you know, discounting Ramondre Stevenson and everything he's done this year. But I think this is the trajectory that Henderson is going to be on, that they're going to just continue to give him more and more. This is an offense that we expect to continue ascending. Really, really like him next year. RJ Harvey, RB9 in fantasy points per game from week 11 on, and that was once J.K. Dobbins was ruled out for the rest of the regular season. We saw Harvey have two top 10 weekly finishes before that. He was the RB22 in fantasy points per game this season. I think we see him take on even more next year and him start to continue to ascend as a meaningful fantasy piece, an RB2 with some RB1 upside there. I think all those guys are very exciting. And then, like I said, for Dalton Kincaid, the third most fantasy points among tight ends through the first 5 weeks, despite the fact only playing around 50% of the Bills' offensive snaps again. He maintained his 11.3 fantasy points per game. If he maintained that throughout the whole season, that would have made him finish as the tight end 5 on the year if he had continued that, if he hadn't gotten hurt, if he hadn't had everything derailed by the injuries. So later in the season, after the injuries occurred, he was only playing about 38% of the snaps, just not the same player. You worry about the durability for sure, because this isn't the first time this has happened, but he showed us this year he can be that top 5 guy, and he was doing it on efficiency. If we get a little more volume for him, and of course, I would be shocked if the Bills don't go out and do something massive at wide receiver to bolster that room this offseason. So that'll factor in as well. But Kincaid definitely showed us this year that he can be a meaningful fantasy player and a pretty strong starter for our offenses, at least when he's healthy.
I think Kincaid, definitely, if he can stay healthy, that's a breakout candidate. I'm with you with on Amari and Hampton 100%. I actually think one thing that people might overthink is how does Hampton fit into Mike McDaniel's more outside zone rushing system. But I actually think we saw this year that Hampton kind of struggled with some of the gap scheme responsibilities early on in Greg Roman's offense. And obviously then he got hurt. It's hard to know what would have happened as the season went on. He sort of started to kind of pick it up, but like guys like Matt Waldman and James Coe both like studied running backs and said that that might happen for Hampton. So a zone system where it's just, this is the defined hole, go hit it, let's go. I think that actually might be better for Hampton. The two running backs, Henderson and Harvey, I think are tougher for me to get full. So I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, but, a little bit tougher for me to get fully on board with Henderson. You could definitely tell that story that you mentioned about Jahmyr Gibbs, but it probably has to bother you a little bit, Boone, that Ramondre Stevenson has 34 opportunities in the playoffs so far. Travion Henderson, 24, and yards from scrimmage wise in the two playoff games, it's not even close. 209 for Ramondre Stevenson, 59 for Travion Henderson. You certainly would have liked him to continue that upward trajectory in the postseason, but like Stevenson has been the guy and been very good in the playoffs so far.
He has been. And to continue with like the Gibbs comparison thing, we saw those other backs with the Lions heavily involved, right? And at times they kind of rode the hot hand, whether it was Jamal Williams, whether it was David Montgomery. They've let the bigger backs, the other guys, take the lead at certain times, especially earlier in Gibbs' career. And then as things have gone along, Gibbs has slowly emerged. Now, I'm not saying that I think Henderson is necessarily going to be a top two or top three fantasy running back like we've seen Gibbs become, but
sure,
we're talking about a breakout. If he emerges as a top 15 fantasy back next year consistently, I think we're good. That's the breakout. That's the guy that you want your lineup, and you're going to have some spike weeks there just based on the type of player he is and the explosiveness and the game-breaking ability. So, yes, it's still a bit of a stretch on him, but I'm pretty confident in the player. I really liked him coming out, talked about him basically all year long, was just kind of waiting. And when he got his opportunity, was great to see him run with it. So, yes, Stevenson is there. It's still kind of lowering the ceiling for the moment, but we're projecting ahead, right? This isn't what's happening right now. This is what we're expecting next year. And I think after a full offseason preparing, looking at the pieces they have, why would they not want to get Henderson more work as they get more comfortable too with him in the offense? You know, he's still just a rookie this year. So as they get more comfortable with him, as they trust him more out there, I think he'll continue to get more opportunity and he'll be a really strong piece in fantasy lineups.
Yeah, he'll be a really fascinating ADP to kind of track this offseason. Like, where does he end up going once we get into August drafts? Let's get into the hopeful bunch here. We've got four players to go through in this group.
All right, Quinshon Judkins on the Browns, who had a very strong start to the season. I think he showed us everything we needed to see in terms of him being a talented player, a guy who can get it done in the pros. Now we just need to find out whether the Browns can get the environment around him to allow him to really find his fantasy ceiling. Jaden Higgins on the Texans, sort of blocked by Nico Collins being there as the number one guy, but we saw some flashes from him for sure this year. Josh Downs on the Colts. Alec Pierce is going to be a free agent this offseason. We'll see what the Colts decide to do, whether they try to find a way to bring him back or not. But it looks like there could be an opportunity for Josh Downs, who I believe we are both fans of in terms of his talent, and we'd like to see him get a bigger opportunity in that offense to see what he could do. And then Bashaul Tuten, another one of these guys that we talked up before the year, and we thought he'd have a chance to eventually make a dent in that Jaguars backfield. Never really happened. He scored a bunch of touchdowns. He flashed a bit, but Trevor Etienne was just good. He held on to that job. He was really good this year, but he's heading to free agency now. And what happens there? Did he do enough for the Jags to offer him a contract to get him back there? Or do they view Tuten as potentially that guy that could take over as the starting back? And if that happens, Harmon, then it is just Tuten to the moon. It is a guy who's going to be an RB2 in fantasy, another one of these guys that has that RB1 upside. You know, we saw some of the bigger plays this year, that nose for the end zone. Still really like him in an offense that for sure is ascending, that we want to invest in, that we want pieces of as well.
Yeah, Tuten's really interesting. Free agency with Travis Etienne is going to be a big one because obviously he was really good for them, but you wonder if Liam Cohen thinks he can recreate that with another guy and just like his scheme overall. That should be interesting to track. On Josh Downs, I love Josh Downs, but there's no doubt he took a step back last year statistically. I still think he's a really good player. You mentioned Alec Pierce, a free agent. An interesting situation to monitor here, and this is something I was talking about with some of the folks in the Reception Perception Discord a couple of weeks ago, and a couple reporters have started to theorize this as well. There's actually a scenario where Michael Pittman could be released or traded by this team in a cap-saving move, just where he is right now financially, and they could potentially use those resources to actually bring back Alec Pierce, either on the franchise tag or an extension. Interesting because Pittman is like a Colts lifer. He's a big time culture guy there, but there is a chance that he's played his last down for the Colts. And if that's the case and they bring back Pierce, I think Downs is good enough to start outside at the flanker position for this team. Now, he's a smaller guy. He's not as big as Pittman, but that would be a more immediate path for him to get that playing time promotion. Because there's really the depth on this team beyond those guys, which is ironic because heading into the year, it's like they've got four good receivers with Pierce, Downs, Mitchell, and Pittman. And now it's like, well, yeah, they might be down two of those guys that we thought coming into this year. They might no longer be on the roster. it would just be interesting to see if they believe that Downs can be a full-time player, because he's a smaller guy. You know, you wonder if his body can hold up to the workload, but obviously love the talent. And if Pittman's not on the team, that increases the odds, I think, even more than if Pierce is not on the team, that he could become that breakout candidate. So I think these are four really good ones here. Higgins is interesting in Houston as well, because you imagine all the vets are going to get cleared out. It'll be Nico, Jaden Higgins, and Jalen Nolan, potentially Tank Dell, maybe coming back from a very serious injury. We'll see what he looks like potentially.
Yeah, with Higgins, I mean, at least 50 yards and or a touchdown in 6 of his last 9 games, kind of quietly did that, was usable for fantasy, 2 for 88 and a touchdown in the fantasy championship. And I think he did really look like a player that could be that number two in the offense. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I really do think that he could be a strong number two even in this offense. They got some things to sort out in the offensive line. CJ Stroud definitely has to improve his game, and they got to continue to improve that environment around him and try to get it a little closer to what he had in that rookie season. I think that's a big part of what's happened with him, that he had just a really ideal setup in that first year, and then some of those things kind of chipped away, and maybe Stroud got too much of that credit in that first season, right? And now people started to think, okay, he's this guy that's going to elevate everyone around him, when in reality, maybe he's not. Maybe he kind of needs that really nice setup, those strong pieces around him, in order for him to be a good fantasy asset and for him to have the kind of year that he had as a rookie. So we'll see what they do this offseason. But yeah, the fact that we saw Higgins actually producing down the stretch, that's what you want to see from a rookie wideout, especially a rookie wideout who's trapped behind a superstar number one receiver.
All right, we've got four longer shots here in the final bucket. There's some deep names on this one, other than the number one overall pick from last year's draft.
Yeah, and Cam Ward, I've said this before, he's another guy, kind of like Tyler Shuck, where I really don't know what the fantasy ceiling is for him. Doesn't offer that much in terms of rushing ability. So a breakout for him would just be them getting him some better weapons, him starting to produce like maybe a top 15 fantasy quarterback. I'm still looking at him as a QB2 for fantasy next year, but we could see with a new coaching staff, with an offseason to get some new pieces around him, we could see him certainly take a step forward in that offense. Braylon Allen, I think I snuck this one in on last week's show. We were talking about Breece Hall, and I mentioned just keep an eye on those other backs for the Jets, because if Breece Hall leaves in free agency, there's at least a non-zero chance that we could see Braylon Allen, who's the next man up, sneak into that starting role next year. A lot to be figured out there. That's why we're talking about some deep names. Keaton Mitchell, going back to that rookie season, so explosive, kind of looks like he like is moving at a different speed than other players on the field, dealt with serious injuries. The start of this year, couldn't even get in the game day lineup, right? He was struggling to have a role in the offense, but then once they get him back out there, what does he do? He starts to make big plays again. He starts to produce. And Derrick Henry on the wrong side of 30, going into his 11th season next year, I think it makes a lot of sense for them to get Keaton Mitchell more involved, and for Keaton Mitchell to potentially be that guy. If Derrick Henry does come to an injury, Keaton Mitchell being that guy who would probably still need someone else. I don't think he's a big volume back based on his size and the type of runner that he is, but somebody that I think could really dominate, could really put up big stats, even if he only is getting, you know, 8 to 12 touches a week or something like that. He's that kind of explosive player. And then one that I find so interesting, this is now, and we're going to talk about some dynasty stuff in the next segment, but Eric All Jr., I should say, I don't want to disrespect him in any way here. A name that people probably forget. He is the Bengals tight end. He has dealt with injuries since he got into the league, and that was after coming into the league, them getting him at a big-time discount because he was coming off an ACL tear in college. He comes into the league. His first 9 games, he starts to produce. In 7 of those first 9 outings, he had multiple catches. That was as a rookie. Then he tears his ACL again, dealing with injuries again, misses this entire season, totally forgotten. And yet he's the kind of player who I think he's supposed to come back. Very positive update on him in November that he's running routes again. He's expected to be cleared by the end of the season, so he should be ready to go for all the offseason activities. And who's he going to have to compete with? 31-year-old Mike Gesicki this year. Noah Fant's going to be a free agent. So I think Eric Hall Jr. is somebody that you could look on your waiver wire. In a competitive league, he might be scooped up. Some of the deeper leagues that I'm in, he's already taken. But in a lot of leagues, he's going to be out there on the waiver wire. And I think he's somebody that could eventually emerge as the Bengals' starting tight end. A really good receiving back. Still has to prove himself as a blocker, especially, you know, inline blocking. He's got some work to do there. He's been out, though. Let's hope he's been, you know, getting himself ready for this. He could come back and be a meaningful fantasy player, but this is a long shot. That's why we're mentioning him here.
Eric Hall Jr. is such a perfect sicko name to end the breakout segments on. That's a really good one. I do wonder if at any point the Bengals might look to, like, we need another dimension here beyond just Chase and Higgins. That's obviously good enough, but if they just add like something else to the offense, so that tight end position is certainly worth monitoring. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we've got your dynasty debates to talk through. We'll get into those right after this. All right, we're back, and it's time for our Dynasty Debates segment. As we've been doing all throughout the month of January here, we've been taking your questions here. FantasyMailbag@yahoosports.com. That's the best way to get your Dynasty Debate discussed on the show. We've got some to get through. We'll see how many we can get through here in this segment, Boone, for today. Let's start with Wes. Has a really interesting question here. Running backs for quarterbacks. I play solely in Superflex Dynasty League. Something that has struck me over the past few seasons is the trade action between quarterbacks and running backs. I've turned down many offers where a seller is trying to send a running back my way for a QB or a QB plus. Makes no sense to me in Dynasty, and particularly Superflex. However, these major trade calculators, which are flawed, I know, often value these running backs over quarterbacks. For example, I recently turned down Josh Jacobs for Jared Goff. I would be the one acquiring Jacobs. Goff seems so much more valuable in terms of points scored and longevity. Using keep trade cut, however, it has Jacobs more valuable than Goff. I recently had someone try to send me Gibbs for Cam Ward, a 2027 first, and Colson Loveland, which comes close in a calculator but makes no sense. Why would a stud rookie quarterback, stud rookie tight end, and a first rounder be considered fair for a running back who will be out of the league long before the others? Make it make sense. Have we lost the plot, or does player longevity cause illusory value here? Thanks, Wes. Great question. I think from a macro standpoint, Boone, number one, how valuable are quarterbacks in Superflex? And two, player longevity. Like, is that kind of a false flag in terms of the value here? Just your thoughts on the whole situation.
Player longevity is something that you should consider as a data point, but you shouldn't be building your fantasy teams completely around that, because normally you want to focus on like the next 2 to 3 years max. And sometimes you might just want to look at the next 1 to 2 years, to be honest, because so much can change in terms of injuries, in terms of coaching. I mean, look at this year. Look how many coaches changed, right? Like, this is incredible the way the league turns over year after year. And if you think you know exactly how long a player is going to be good for and how many years he's going to play for and all that sort of stuff, I think that can end up putting you in a spot where you look kind of foolish. Now, in terms of quarterback value in Superflex leagues, so valuable. So valuable to the point where I want to roster even backups in some of the deeper dynasty leagues that I have. Because if you get that quarterback injury, a backup quarterback in Superflex can be almost as valuable as like holding on to those backup running backs where you're hoping that they get that opportunity, and you don't even have to start them. You can then turn around and trade them to a manager who needs a quarterback at that point. Maybe the manager who just lost the quarterback to an injury, and you send the backup that way, and now they get to start that guy. So I think that's one point here. I also think, and I don't want to speak ill of any other sites out there, any other trade calculators, any other dynasty trade values or anything like that, but you got to do your research and figure out, you know, who's doing it in a way that you feel like you kind of feel the same about the values of the players, right? And look around, look at everyone's. I obviously do dynasty trade value charts. A lot of people out there do. Go see who is actually valuing players the way that you feel that they're valued, and start to follow that one. Start to use that as your guide or as a data point. I think that's important. Or do what I did before my career started. Start to do your own trade value charts, because it's a fun exercise to do. And you could kind of look at others like mine as that starting point and then build off of there. But I think that's important. You want to make those final decisions. Now, I do want to say, keep trade cut It's a great tool. You know, you can use that. There's a lot of people involved. It's the, you know, the wisdom of the masses kind of thing. But I will say that when you go to keep trade cut, it pops up on the screen, you know, three players, keep one, trade one, cut one, and you decide, and then you submit, and then it gives you access to the site. Does everyone do that to the best of their ability, or are people just clicking buttons to get into the site, right?
No, so I don't know. I've done it, and I'm clicking buttons to get into the site.
Right? Like, so I don't know that you want to rely on that as like your one source. Can it be one of a few sources?
Yeah, sure. Agree.
But just looking at that and saying this is like the blueprint exactly, I don't think that that is the way to go here. Now, if we think about these trades specifically, and I saw this question before we started, so I went and looked at the actual values that I have in my trade value charts here. In the case of Jacobs and Goff, totally agree. Jacobs, an older back, I have him as a 48 in terms of his dynasty trade value points. He's the RB 16 in my dynasty rankings. Goff, I have as a 63 in Superflex value. He's the QB 20. So that gives you an idea of how much more valuable I see Goff than Jacobs here. Now, the second trade that was mentioned, I think this one's a little more interesting because Gibbs for Cam Ward, Colson Loveland, and a 2027 first, it does seem like a lot that the person is giving up to get Gibbs. But I think this is one where it depends where that person is in terms of their roster build. If you're a contender, I might be willing to overpay to get a player like Gibbs, because how else are you going to get a player like Gibbs? People aren't going to give that guy away for the exact value amount that any trade value calculator has. They're going to want more, right? Especially if it's someone that needs to rebuild, needs these younger pieces. So that's a trade that I don't think is crazy. I think I'd be willing to do it if I'm a contender and I want to get an elite player like Gibbs, who I have as my RB2 overall in Dynasty. He's also young. He's 23 right now. He turns 24 this year. So you're getting a player who's going to have many seasons, hopefully, if he can stay healthy. It's not like he's an older back that you're giving up all of this for. And then you look at the other side, and I said earlier, like Cam Ward, what is his fantasy ceiling? Could he be your QB2 for the next 10 years? Maybe. But does he have that elite, like, you know, difference-making kind of ceiling? I don't think he does. So I'm not worried about giving up that piece. Colson Loveland, I think, is going to be really good, but it's at a position that doesn't have as much value in Dynasty and tight end, unless it's tight end premium, which would change the equation here. And then the 2027 first, it does look like a really strong class. And yet, you don't know where that pick's going to be. If this person is a contender who's getting Gibbs, that pick might be very late in the round. And then you're looking at, can you actually hit on the right player in that first round to make that pick valuable? So I think that trade to me, even though if you look at a trade value chart like mine, it would say that the three pieces for the one, the three pieces are more valuable. It's one that I could totally justify if the Gibbs manager is looking to contend and they're trying to find that extra big piece that can be that weekly winner for them or potentially that league winner for them. It's a move that I think I would be willing to make in the right circumstance.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense, and it's a good breakdown there. Clearly, the answer is read Justin Boone's trade value charts. That's the answer to the question here. But I think the only thing I'd kind of, you know, balk at in terms of the question is the stud rookie quarterback thing. Like, maybe Cam Ward is a stud fantasy quarterback. Maybe he falls into that, just like you mentioned earlier in the breakout segment, a QB2 type that holds down the job but isn't really a needle mover in fantasy. And Jahmyr Gibbs is a needle mover regardless of your format. And like you said, guy isn't even on his contract extension yet. He should be very, very good for a long time. Last one that we'll get to today comes in from Twitter. This is from GF Screg, something, a bunch of numbers here. You never know what these Twitter handles. Anyways, we're just going to take the one question here. There was a bunch of questions, but the main one was, should CeeDee Lamb still be counted as an elite dynasty wide receiver or just a good one? I think this is a good question, Boone, because like, when do you view it as, like, well, number one, what is your view of who is an elite dynasty wide receiver right now? And two, does CeeDee Lamb belong in that? And when do you start to kind of knock a guy down from that elite tier to maybe top of tier two?
So that elite tier right now, I think we talked about them last week. It would be Puka Nacua, it would be JSN, and it would be Ja'Marr Chase. CeeDee Lamb, not that far behind, though. And I think the way people are viewing this season, the George Pickens scenario, all that sort of stuff, the injuries that Lamb dealt with this year, I think that's kind of got his value down a bit. And listen, maybe he won't average over 10 targets per game like he did in 2023 and 2024, but I think he's going to be really close. I think this guy is still a phenomenal player. And if you look at the numbers this year, I know the touchdowns were down, but we know touchdowns can be very volatile, right? So I think a down year for touchdowns is not like a death sentence in terms of his fantasy value. And he did finish pretty slow the last couple weeks, but he was also on a team that wasn't really contending for anything. So maybe that factors in as well. But if we just look at the 10 games that he played before that, he had over 100 yards in six of those 10 games, Harmon. His lowest output was 66 yards. I would say that's not even that bad when you're talking about a fantasy floor. 66 yards. I mean, we see some of the top wideouts go out there and have one catch. For him to have 66 yards in his lowest game in that 10-game stretch, that's still very good. And if you look at that 10-game stretch, he averaged 9.9 targets, 6.3 catches, and 97.6 yards. In a full 17-game season, that puts him on pace for huge numbers. Over 100 catches, over 1,600 yards. Like, he is still that dude. So we'll see what happens with George Pickens. That will factor in here for sure. And yes, maybe he's not on the same tier now as those very, very elite top guys. But I would say if he's not in that conversation, he is damn close, because this guy is still a phenomenal receiver. And I think because of those injuries, because some of those big Pickens performances, and because the way the season kind of, you know, crawled to the finish for Lamb, I think people are looking at him totally the wrong way. This guy is still a meaningful fantasy asset.
Yep, I literally have him, you know, not to spoil the content here, but I have him as the very top player in tier two. So yeah, he's right there to me. And any of those guys in tier two with the right couple of breaks, for the most part, especially the guys towards the top, could easily be tier one guys. It just, the one thing happens this way or the other. And Lamb is certainly one of those guys, still an awesome talent. Had a high ankle sprain, what, in week three of this season, or very, very early on. So who knows if he was ever 100% healthy. Also had just some weird drops throughout the course of the year. So you imagine that, one, he'll be healthier, and two, like, drops are not sticky season to season. And for the most part, it doesn't even really move the needle as much as we think as it does anyway. So I'd definitely be buying CeeDee Lamb if people think he's had some sort of major fall off here. So, all right, those are all the ones we have today. Boone, hell of a show, buddy. I hope that when we talk to you next week, this time, we don't have any more insane Bills news to go over there. Maybe even a potentially a head coach to make you feel better. Brian Daboll back in Buffalo. I hope that makes you feel better.
Well, I think for me, I'm going to try to get some sun on my face, and I'll try to wear some more colorful clothes next week so that it's not the same kind of morning vibes that I'm putting out this show. But yeah, there will be a lot of things that happen this offseason. Just at the moment, this week, it's not a great week to be a Bills fan, but I'll accept it.
It is what it is. You've had enough good times for a while. Back to the doldrums for the Buffalo Bills. All right, that's going to do it for our show today. Tomorrow, Joel Smith joins me to preview Championship Sunday. We're also going to share some favorite props for the weekend, things we have our eye on. That's going to be live on this YouTube channel here at 5 p.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.